And so, did you just want me to say dispatches from the underground? Dispatches from the underground.
Dispatches from the underground.
With your host,
Joey Steele. Up to no good. We're good?
Question authority.
Dispatches from the underground.
Question everything.
Dispatches from the underground!
Alright, welcome to Dispatches from the Underground. I'm your host, Joey Steele. Thanks for getting down with us. We are coming at you from the underground in New York City. That's where we are. This is what we do. I'm glad you could join us down here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this show today. We have a very special show, and I know it's super fucking hard to like sit down, although you're probably not sitting down. You're probably running around doing some other shit or whatever. It's hard to tune into an underground thing because there's just so much going on in the mainstream that we're constantly fucking bombarded with, and it's constantly bumming us out, and we constantly feel like there's no hope or future for a better world because everybody's plugged into the same bullshit media that is being fucking, that is crushing them 24 hours a day on CNN or Fox or whatever the fuck it is. And we're all plugged into that, and it's just hard to see a future because the fucking future looks terrible, if that is any idea of what the future is going to look like by looking at that bullshit. And it's hard to fucking like to then sift through all that or to like pick yourself up and bust through that wall and get down with an underground thing like Dispatches, because here we are talking again. You think it's going to be the same thing that the mainstream is doing, these talking heads on the mainstream media. And it's hard to want to have more of that in your life. I think on this show we are trying to bring a very different perspective, something healthy, something that's going to inspire you to want to pick yourself up and go out and live in this fucking world and hopefully see people for what they are, or rather what they can be, not what they are presently being. Seeing those people for something wonderful that they could become. Hopefully we could be part of you refueling that shit after it gets fucking, after all of your fuel just burns out listening to the mainstream bullshit. That's why we exist, and I want to thank all of you for doing whatever you had to do in order to find this show. I really appreciate that those decisions in your life have brought you to this point. I'm not sure if you always appreciate those decisions in your life, but I really appreciate them. And hopefully you'll appreciate this show, because I think we have a pretty special one today. Today we have a very special guest. Mani Mustofi is going to be here. He's from the band Race Trader. Mani, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. I am sorry if I'm not, but you know, I'm an ignorant piece of shit. And so there you go. That's what comes out of my dumbass brain. Mani is here. He's from the band Race Trader. They just released their brand new album, 2042. And you can pick it up on their Bandcamp page, racetrader-hc for hardcore.bandcamp.com. It's just released, like literally a fucking week ago. Good Fight Music put out this new Race Trader album. It's incredible. I think anyone who digs heavy music, anyone who digs like the heavier side of punk, or you know, maybe some elements of grindcore, death metal in there, like anyone who digs that outlook is gonna dig this album. It is fantastic. And it, to me, the most important part, and I think this is true for Mani too, but I don't want to put words in his mouth. To me, the content, the substance is really what stands out in this album. It is supremely conscious and provocative and thought-provoking, and I think anyone who likes what this show is trying to do is going to love this album, because this album does it better than this show is trying to do. So Monty's going to come on today. He's going to talk about this brand new album that just got released, 2042, by his band Race Trader. But we're also going to be talking a little bit about, obviously, where things are headed. So on the first part of this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about how Race Trader came to be today again, because Race Trader was a band that was sort of bigger in the mid to late 90s, and they took a break for a long time. I'm not exactly sure how long they took a break for. I'm going to talk to Mani about that, but they took a break for a long time, and they got back together very recently, And I want to know why now. So why did Monty feel like now was the time to bring this all back together? I don't know if it's things of the band, or I'm assuming it has something to do with the political climate and how things are going in this world. We're going to find out the truth from Monty. But then after that, I want to talk to Monty about that political climate. Whatever his answer is, hopefully his answer has something to do with the political climate. But whatever Monty's answer is, I want to talk about the political climate, because very recently, last week, we had a lot of political violence being used from the right wing against people in this country. There was a there was a couple of shootings. There was a mad bomber on the loose, and it's very daunting that we're not only being bombarded by this constant negativity and insanity from the mainstream media about our daily lives and our potential and all this stuff, but also like there's objective things they have to cover, and that there's right wing nut jobs perpetuating really cruel and vicious violence against people based on their ethnicity and outlook, and based on the fucked up outlook that they have. So I want to talk to Monty about political violence. There's a lot of people in the mainstream media who are talking about political violence in the last few days, and I don't feel like any of them have broken it down in any just way, because I'm someone who believes in some ways and believes in political violence, and the fact that we as human beings are constantly subjected to poverty and violence on the hands of the state, but also violence at the hands of people who are pushing forward ignorant, misogynistic, racist outlooks. And I believe in people fighting back against that. I believe in people taking up whatever they need to take up by any means necessary and combating those backward ideas that are being pushed upon them. And I know that's political violence. I think it's conscious. I think it's left-wing. I think it's ultimately something that's going to make this world a better place and actually end oppression. But it's political violence. And it's certainly not the political violence that's being used and talked about from last week, which is oppression for the sake of oppression. It's trying to stomp oppressed people back down and keep them from being conscious. I think that they're vastly different. But I do think that we're all being lumped together by the mainstream media as being the same. And, it's not the same. And I don't remember if it was Ward Churchill. Ward Churchill was an activist and a left-wing writer and academic who was pushed out of his job during the Bush years. But he wrote a great book about pacifism and pathology, and it was a really, really thought-provoking book about the idea of pacifism as being a problem in society. And I don't remember if it was Ward Churchill who said this or if someone else who said this, but I think when you think about violence, you think about like a knife fight or knives, right? There are people who can take out a knife and cut someone down in order to kill them, in order to take their power and to destroy them. But there's also an ability to take out a scalpel and be trained and know how to use that to cut out a cancerous tumor, which is also violent. You're cutting someone open, you're splaying them open, and you're violently removing a huge part of them and causing them to, a great deal of pain and need to be anesthetized and then heal. It's violent. It's a violent act, but that violent act can actually bring, positivity and health. Obviously that person wants that violence then, but then this is sort of unwanted. The analogy is not perfect, but I think we need to have a little bit of conversation about how the violence that we think should be perpetuated, violence for justice, violence for empowerment, violence to fight back against Nazis and fucked up right-wing pieces of shit who are just enclosing on our space to grow as human beings. Violence against them versus the violence that's being perpetuated in Pittsburgh and with these bombs that luckily did not really go off and hurt anybody. How these two things are different. The mainstream media is not going to do that. I'm really honored that y'all got through all that bullshit to find this show, and I hope that Monty and I can talk a little bit about political violence and how there are different sorts, and with a little more complexity than the mainstream media ever wants us to deal with. That's what we're going to deal with on the first half of the show. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about the new album, 24-2, just released from Race Trader. We're going to get into more details about it. We're going to talk about the name of the album. We're going to talk about what Race Trader is trying to accomplish with it and its shows and, their whole outlook. And they have a brand new video that just was released. I don't think any of the members of the band are in the video. I know they have an explanation up for that on their Facebook page, but make sure you check out Cataclysm, which is up on their Facebook page. It's being circled around. They've released a couple of singles from this new album, but the album is fantastic. We're going to play some music from it. We're going to play some other music from people who were featured in that video, Cataclysm, and from bands that are associated and dig and work with Race Trader. I think you're gonna like all the music on this episode, and I think you're gonna get a lot of that out of this episode in general. So, thank you very much to Monty for coming on the show. Thank you, Race Trader, for putting out this new album and hopefully getting us all more conscious and getting us all uplifted and empowered to do the work that needs to be done to change the direction of this fucking fucked up world. And thank you to everyone who's listening in. I appreciate y'all getting down and staying down with us and growing through all this. I do want to say thank you also to Real Punk Radio at realpunkradio.com for all the incredible programming they have over there. You can listen to Dispatches from the Underground on their incredible programming every Wednesday night at 11 p.m. There's a show up for you to listen to. Thank you, Tommy Unit, for doing all the great work you do at Real Punk Radio. And always, if you dig what you hear today, please rate this show on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast, and go to our website, dispatchersfromtheunderground.com. Subscribe there. You can make sure that you check out the merch section. We have a bunch of incredible merch up there. I just released a new album with one of my other bands, a new record with one of my other bands, and you can check it out over there. Also, there is a donate section, so if you do feel like you are getting content that is unique and special and can't be heard other places, and you like this show, please make a donation. Help us continue doing what we do here at Dispatches. There is a bunch of costs associated with making this show happen. We do have professional gear that we might not use it properly, but we do have professional gear, and it costs us some money, and it costs us some money to maintain these sites. So please, if you can, donate. If not, not a big deal. The show is free for a fucking reason. We want you to hear it. We want you to spread it. We want you to share it. And we want you to get down all the time, because that's what ultimately this is all about. And that's why we did this podcast. And that's why Monty took a trek over here in the middle of a fucking workday to make this show happen. Because we believe in consciousness and we believe in change. And let's talk about how we're going to do it. Here is Monty from the band Race Trader. Get down. All right. Before we get to the discussion with Monty, I want to listen to a tune. Here is one of the tunes from 2042, the brand new album put out by Race Trader. Monty is featured, obviously, doing the vocals for this band. So here it is. Here is Race Trader, new song from 2042. Get down. Monty, what's up, dude? How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. I mean, how's life? Life is good?
Busy. Life is busy.
Yeah, you just had a child recently.
3 months.
3 months. That's intense. So it was still like up all night craziness.
You know, the kid's really mellow. But I have a 3-year-old on top of that.
Oh, my God.
So it's like a perfect storm.
So you just like pain, maybe. That's the thing. So in the midst of all of this, you're like, let's reignite Race Trader and put out a brand new album, like this month.
Right.
Okay, well, let me ask you, why did you think, I'm super curious, I know a lot of the people listening are probably very curious too. Before we get into some other political things, I want to know right off the bat, why Race Trader right now?
Yeah, I mean,
because it's been a break. It's been how long since y'all played together, really?
We didn't play together for 18, 19 years. Yeah, it's been a really long time. I mean, we all sort of stayed friends and stayed in touch. And there were always sort of talks about, hey, let's do something. Let's get together and play. The time that it was closest to being real was, I mean, our drummer is in a significantly large pop band,
mm-hmm.
pop punk. And it was sort of the height of their career. So it just sort of never happened when we were sort of actually, we practiced once and that was sort of the height of their career. So there's like never really a motivation, enough motivation to sort of put us over the top. And like people were going to school, people were starting families, starting like serious jobs. And so like, you know, it was always sort of a distant memory. And I think for a certain time I wanted it to be not a memory, but like that was cool for what it was. Why go back and try to like taint the memory, your own personal memory of
yeah.
it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it was right around the time of Ferguson where we started having like really serious conversations. Like, let's do something. Because we just felt with the start of the Black Lives Matter movement and also just general discourse about things like white privilege and the role of race in institutions and institutionalized racism as opposed to bigotry, because that was like one thing that I think a lot of people maybe miss about what the band was about and how it was different than other anti-racist bands at the time, is we weren't really about like be more tolerant, man, like be less hateful in your heart. We were like, be as hateful in your heart as you want. If you don't have any power, it doesn't fucking matter. Right? So we were really about power and institutions. And we thought that the discourse around race and racial justice in America had gotten to the point where that type of discussion was not fringe anymore. It was sort of like, for lack of a better term, mainstream. Mm. And we thought like, well, maybe we have something to contribute or to say, and maybe we could show solidarity for the movements that are sort of confronting that stuff head on. And so we started talking seriously, and then Trump came on the scene.
So you guys, you and the band, like y'all and the band were having these political conversations separately, like sort of like not really around the band, but just talking to each other. Or was it like these things happening in your lives separately? You're seeing these things and sort of like seeing bandmates and they're coming up. Like how, like you're actually talking to each other. I can't get my band to talk in band practice, Manny. So I don't know how.
No, I mean, it was more like something would happen in the news. There'd be another police shooting. And then one of us would message the others and being like, this fucking sucks.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And then somebody else is like, do we want to do something?
Mm.
So I think we were kind of set on doing something.
And then Trump happened.
And then we're like, okay, I mean, we feel at least on a personal level, we need, like, we just need to scream about this.
So, you know, I think that that's an interesting point you're bringing up. We're going to talk about Race Trader on the second half of the podcast completely. We're going to talk about the new album. We're going to talk about the new songs that y'all just released because the album just came out, 2042, right?
Right.
And that's the name of the album. And so we're going to talk about that. But let's talk about these times we're living in for a second, because it's rare that we get someone to come on the podcast who makes as, you know, relevant and incredible music as you do, who's also deeply invested and interested in the political climate and changing it as much as you are. So I'm really interested in talking about the very contemporary news, like as of last week. Obviously, we've seen all this insanity with Trump for these years, the last 2 years, 3 years, really, you know, with things ramping up to the election in 2016. But, you know, last week here in the U.S., we saw Mad Bomber like sending out bombs to moderately left-wing people in the public eye. We saw a synagogue shot up by crazy right-wing fanatic killing 11 people. We also saw two people murdered in, what was it? There was another shooting where two people were killed as well, a race-related murder, a racist intended murder. I mean, and we have a whole country now talking about political extremism, political violence, and, you know, violence with a political intent. You know, Jeff Sessions came out like maybe yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, a few days ago, and said, like, any political violence is completely off the table. Anyone who's trying to make something happen politically and using violence is beyond the pale. And I obviously have thoughts about it, but I want to hear what you think. Like, what, all these things happen, you know, and we've seen it sort of headed this direction. We had the Proud Boy beatings in New York City, like maybe 2 weeks ago or something like that. We've seen this all lurching this direction. And obviously, Race Traitor in some ways could feel the pulse like moving that way. But like, where do you sit now seeing this political violence and also this conversation? Like, what are you thinking? What are your thoughts?
Like, what do I think about this moment, or what do I think about the issue of political violence?
Let's take this moment first, and then like maybe your thoughts about this moment, and then we can squeeze toward political violence, because I think that that's an important thing for us to talk about too, specifically.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about this moment is a moment where there's, there's a fascist movement on the rise, and it's, people get confused because maybe it doesn't have all the endowments of, you know, classic fascism, but it's, for all intents and purposes, that's what it is. And it's using all the same tools that fascists always do, which is different forms of hyper nationalism mixed with the sort of co-opting of the certain elements, not all, but certain elements of the capitalist class, and mixed with co-opting of conservative religious institutions. Mm. I mean, like, and that's a big part of it. I think people aren't talking about. People are talking a lot about like the sort of white nationalists, but it's the, you know, evangelical Christian identity white nationalists, for example, that are being really influential across the continent. And we just saw elections in Brazil where, you know, evangelical Christians played a big role in bringing a sort of proto or pseudo fascist or full on fascist to power. But in the U.S., that's what's going on. And if you want to dramatically transform a state, you need instability, and you need to cause it. And there's a sort of, you know, Trump and his and Jeff Sessions are not, you know, they're not what we think of when we think of like neo-Nazis, you know.
Well, Sessions was pretty close for a while.
Yes, but yeah. Jeff Sessions is like a suit and tie Nazi, right?
And he's distanced himself explicitly from like right-wing
organizations. Right. So there's this mythology that racism was, you know, these like working class white guys that were like, you know, poorly educated and, you know, sort of like a mob, right? As opposed to the history of U.S. racism in the U.S. is that it was always from the top down. You know, the Klan at its height always had people within the state that were supportive of it. Now, at a certain point, certain elites decided the Klan wasn't worth the mayhem that it caused and kind of put them to rest. Right now, there's some people that might think it's worth the mayhem. Mm-hmm. There's other people, you know, for example, like, you see Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon thought like the Unite the Right march, which was the Charlottesville march.
Only a year ago. It feels like forever ago, but it's only about, you know.
But he thought it hurt their cause. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it was like, it wasn't refined enough, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, you couldn't sell it to like soccer moms, right? But you might be able to sell other things. So part of what we see in terms of like these shootings and stuff, I don't know if it's the intent of the people that are sort of leading this movement, but it's a knowing consequence of it, right? So
like the inciting of these less stable elements of their extreme right wing fanaticism they're being incited and they're being unleashed, which the right wing has always been much more willing to do than the left wing of the Capitalist Party. I feel like the right wing has always been much more interested in unleashing their rabid dogs to go out and cause mayhem or to make change or whatever. Then I feel like, you know, the left wing of the Democratic Party, which I feel like Bernie Sanders is just sort of touching into. Obviously, it's very different, but you know, I feel like there's a lot of known danger when they unleash these people on the right, and they know what they're going to do. It was foreseeable.
I mean, they have a. If you look at like the culture that has born out of talk radio, which is really what the political ideology is now. It is a culture 100% of violence, right? Hate and violence. It really is. It's about, you know, that's where you see the sort of patriot movement, you know, people going out in the woods and shooting guns. And I'm not saying going out in the woods and shooting guns is always a bad idea.
Right.
I'm saying that they're doing it for bad reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so like okay, so let's talk about Pittsburgh.
Okay. Pittsburgh is where a synagogue was shot up. I believe I could be wrong at this point. I'm not exactly sure. I believe 11 were murdered by a crazy right-wing fanatic and obviously anti-Semitic right-wing. I don't know if he's officially a Republican, but Trump supporter.
Right. So the key thing is to look at the type of anti-Semitism and whether or not anti-Semitism was isolated, which it wasn't. So the guy posts right before the shooting on Facebook that this Jewish American refugee assistance group, right? It's a Jewish group that helps people get asylum in the U.S., including Arabs and Muslims and including people from Latin America. He's saying this group is letting people into the country to kill us. And then he says, forget the optics, I'm going in.
Oh, wow.
And then he went in.
Mm-hmm.
So this attack wasn't just an attack on Jews in America. It was an attack on Jews in America because of their relationship with these other brown people that he's afraid of. And this is a historic narrative in white supremacist circles, which is that during the civil rights movement, for example, there was this idea that the civil rights movement is being led by Jews, not black people, because black people aren't smart enough and capable of organizing. So you need the conspiratorial masters, the Jews, to kind of put this together. So when they look at this caravan, right?
Which is something that is being harped on so heavily, and I think people on the coasts aren't getting it, but in the Midwest, everyone is obsessed with this caravan.
So, exactly. And caravan is on Fox News 24/7.
It is pumped hard.
And what do they say about the caravan? Okay, these people are an invasion. They're going to rush the border and, you know, fill up the country. They are not that they're asylum seekers, and most of them are just going to go to the border and say, please help me, which mm-hmm. is what the case will be for the majority of them. So they're the invaders, which is classic, you know, white power, like terminology. They are carrying diseases, infectious diseases, tuberculosis and other sorts of things, and they're going to get us all sick. This is being said on Fox News like 24/7. They're infiltrated by members of ISIS, right?
Oh, my God.
Which Fox News' own journalists in the caravans, walking alongside the caravan, say there's no evidence of.
Yeah.
But the commentators, quote-unquote commentators, are saying this 24/7. So if you're just, your entire worldview is just shaped by these sort of talking heads, you are facing a disease-ridden, terrorist-laced cultural invasion, hordes of thousands of people that are going to get here any day now.
Yep.
And then if you then go away from Fox and go like to the next degree, more conspiratorial, right-wing, white power media, they're saying, and on top of all of that stuff, it's Jews that are organizing and facilitating Jesus. This. this caravan. So that's the context in which, you know, dude says I'm going in.
Yeah. And you know, I feel like it's you know, this is a little bit of the narrative we've seen rising for a long time. Obviously, the Unite the Right rally and the continued exposure of like white supremacists marching in the streets, which hadn't happened in a long time in the U.S. I mean, it did happen a lot back, you know, even in the 80s, even up obviously up to the 80s, but in the 80s as well. And then sort of like fell off with David Duke not being in the limelight anymore. The Klan wasn't in the limelight. And all of a sudden in 2010s, it's really something that's become a thing again. And on a few different fronts. But I do want to talk, I want to take 2 minutes. I want to talk about political violence by in and of itself. And then sort of like, it can't be abstracted, right? Because you have a lot of talking heads in the media that have been ramping up conversations about political violence for the last few years because they've been talking about left-wing political violence. They never talk about right-wing political violence. They're always talking about left-wing political violence, the anti-fascist violence threat of anti-fascist, the threat. And that's the way political violence has been shaped for kind of a long time, really since Seattle 99. The thrust of a lot of mainstream news coverage about political violence has been the left, the crazy anarchist left-wing violent types. And now, in the last few years, we've seen extreme, well, in the last 40 years, really, Tim McVeigh, like, you know, we've seen radical violence perpetuated by right-wing fanatics. But those get pushed to the side as like, oh, those are, you know, those are just anomalies. But now we are confronted with at least, you know, at least the mainstream is talking about political violence for the right wing. But they're sort of like pigeonholing it all together. I don't really know how to even like dissociate all these things together. Like, I'm not really even sure where to begin, man. Yet.
Before you even get, I mean, this pigeonholing it all together starts at the level of rhetoric and then goes to violence. Mm-hmm. So everybody's saying, okay, guys, let's bring down the temp. All sides need to bring down the temperature in the room. Oh, really? All sides? This side is talking about ethnic cleansing, and this side is saying, don't ethnically cleanse, and throwing in some, like, you know, French words in there. Yeah. Like, that's, yes, there might be a tonal problem on the left, but the substance of it is don't kill everybody. Right? So it's a completely crazy, false equivalency.
Right. And this is Trump literally getting out there and saying, like, oh, there are good people on both sides. Like, this is what he said after Charlottesville. Like, this is the exact thing.
And the reverse of it is saying that there's bad people on both sides,
right,
which, of course, there is.
Yeah.
But let's just do the numbers here.
Yeah.
It's not an equivalent sort of thing. So that's one thing. Then it gets generalized to violence, right? Now, as far as we've seen, the left-wing violence in, you know, recent memory, and certainly in the Trump era, has been a bunch of dudes in black hoodies throwing punches, worst case scenario, pepper spray, right, at a bunch of Nazis. Or maybe smashing the window of some corporate symbol.
Exactly.
That is the extent of the violence. It's not an equivalent violence to people going into synagogues with you know, assault weapons, right? Or people going into churches or Sikh temples or whatever it might be that we've seen these years. So the violence is not equivalent. So we need to talk about it as it is. But the one
that's a really
thing,
good point, and talk about the equivalency is something I don't think about. It's a really good point.
It's just not a comparable thing. So even if you come up with some conclusion that you know, the anti-fascist movement use of violence is bad, I'm not endorsing that conclusion. Even if you come up with that conclusion, why do you waste any time? If your point is to be against violence, why do you waste time with them?
Right.
Because the violence on the other side is a lot greater, and it's a lot more visceral and violent. You know.
It's life, more life-threatening, and it's more extreme, it's more, you know, it's more everything.
And the intent is attached to more violence, right?
Which is not just the equivalency, it's also like the intent, the substance of it is so much
right,
different.
So if you look at, you know, what's interesting is like Antifa, or the thing that's called Antifa, is sort of, you know, that confederation of types of activists is mostly born out of, you know, like hard left circles, mostly anarchists, some communists, but there's other people involved, right? But if you actually look at like where it puts the bulk of its activities, it's actually not necessarily a revolutionary thing. It's a mitigation strategy. It's about just stopping the rise of fascism. That stopping the rise of fascism is like a prerequisite to being able to do any other social change, because once we have that, we're really screwed, mm-hmm. right? So what do? They just try to stop, you know, overtly white power organizations from organizing and having platforms to help them organize. That's what they do.
I feel like you could take the last minute of what you said and like plaster it everywhere, because that is a very good breakdown of exactly what Antifa is, even from on any side you're looking at it.
Despite, yeah, and this is the thing that's interesting about it, is if you put aside the personal politics of the, or the move, the underlying politics of the movement, the actual actions of the movement should not be the actual... short-term goals of the movement should be universally accepted. Forget the long-term goals. The short-term right. goals should be universally accepted. Now, then there's the question about this use of limited violence. And I think it's important to say it is limited violence, right? Because you can see a scenario.
What do you mean by limited violence? What is
because
that?
What they're doing is they're just violently Antifa. Confronting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're violently confronting they're violent kind of groups that are already using or prone to violence from in an organizing space.
So right? They're using limited violence as not a long term strategy, but it's a limited plan to use this against these people, is what you're saying.
I mean, I don't know what the right. plan is, because right. there's no Antifa,
no
right?
Plan, exactly.
There's no.
It's no.
I mean, one of the problems with Antifa yeah. is that it is too like this concept is too loose.
Yeah.
So there are idiots that do things, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at the general thrust of what's going on, they're using very limited amounts of violence, right, to confront pretty hardcore promoters of serious, serious violence. Like, these are people that are promoting ethnic cleansing unambiguously.
Yeah.
And ethnic cleansing does not happen anywhere in the world without killing a shit ton of people. So that's now, I want to add one more point to that.
Please.
And this is where I'll criticize Antifa or people on the left. We have to always, always be careful not to fetishize violence, which has happened a lot. And it was really fetishized in sort of post-colonial era and with hardcore Marxists.
That's definitely guilty of it here, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I'm guilty
very,
of it,
guilty
too.
Of it.
But we always have to remind ourselves the goal is a society with no violence, or at least the minimal possible violence. That is what we're going for. So when we decide to act outside of our ideals, right, we have to make those decisions in ways that are strategic. This is a tactic. It is not the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I have to say about that. The other thing, though, is what the way Antifa has organized its sort of abilities in terms of violence is not going to stop us if the shit really hits the fan.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, also, this is a huge problem for anybody who considers themselves as being anti-fascist on an organizational level, because there is a very, despite what the right wing says on Fox News, there's a massive difference in how everybody views anti-fascist organizing. And that is true amongst everybody on the left. And, you know, it is very much to stop something, and it is very much to stop something that's not a police-run organization or, you know.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
So I think Antifa has been demonstrably successful in the Trump era at slowing to stopping the rise of the sort of grassroots-level white power movement, by closing its spaces, creating a higher cost for people, as Richard Spencer says, making it no longer fun,
mm-hmm.
right? And exposing the violence of the other groups. So, you know, now, you know, people are coming after the Proud Boys because there's a video of exposed, a little bit of violence causes them to act 10 times more right. violent, and they're exposed. So
strategically
that's
brilliant.
Strategically brilliant. The problem mm-hmm. that we're facing in Antifa is, I don't know if these grassroots Antifa activists are equipped to deal with this yet, or if they're the people that can deal with this. I want them to be, and I want to be part of that. Is the problem is the nucleus of the white power movement is not in the Proud Boys. It's on Fox News.
Right.
It's Tucker Carlson. It's not Richard Spencer. Right? So, and do these tactics that we've used work? I mean, can you dox Tucker Carlson? You know, like, Can you stop him from getting into the Fox News building?
I've gotten pretty close to Lou Dobbs before, but not close enough where I could do anything about it. And also, I was stopped by Secret Service. Lou Dobbs is not in government. I don't know why the fucking Secret Service guys fucking stopped
me. Was it at a political event?
It was at a political event, but still, like, he was the only one up there that I was trying to get nearer to when I was, you know, obviously I was going to talk to him, but, you know. So anyway.
They'd already run your profile.
Yeah, they knew, knew what was going on. I'll say I am very interested in talking to you more about the fetishizing of violence and, you know, my personal problems with it and how to get around it, because I don't see a way around it even. And so I continue to advocate for the fetishizing of violence as we are talking about in this conversation. But just like, you know, I think it is a way, it's a short term way for us to talk about something that needs to get done and has to happen. But it does come off as fetishizing, and it's not our goal. Like, obviously, we don't want to oppress people. Our goal is to end oppression. And violence is oppressive. So our goal is to get beyond that oppression, but oppressing an oppressor feels really good. I feel, you know, like that idea feels really, really good.
Totally.
So I would love to talk to you more about that.
But one, you know.
But we don't have time now, but go ahead.
But I'll just say, I'll end it with this.
Yes.
This is how I always think about it is Propagandhi has one of my favorite lyrics of all time. Play the man, not the puck.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
So sometimes you have to play the puck because that's what's going to go in the goal, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think what, again, I think what Antifa did was good. But I think that, like, now the picture has to be broader. And it's, and I want to, and one, I just want to say one more thing that is linked to Pittsburgh is for a right wing fascist consolidation of power, right? You need a disruptive event. That disruptive event could just as easily come from the right as the left. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. They just need enough chaos to say, okay, you thought the Patriot Act was bad. Look at what we can do right. In terms of controlling
for sure.
society.
No, it's a very good, the long-term game is something that hopefully on the left we're better at looking at. And that's another reason why we don't commit acts of violence like they do, despite the fact that many of us in our hearts probably do want to commit them against oppressive institutions, not oppressive individuals, but oppressive institutions. We don't, because we know in the long term, this is not something that's going to be advantageous to people's consciousness and empowerment. So, you know, I think that we touched on a million incredible things in this. And I think there's a lot to listen to, and hopefully you'll be able to come back on and talk a little bit more about this, because that was really exciting. I appreciate that.
I'm in the neighborhood.
All right. Let's take a second. Let's listen to a song, and we're going to come back and talk for a few minutes about the brand new album from Race Traitor. Get down. Let's take a little break and listen to a song from the band that actually brought me together with Monty. Our good friends from Chicago, La Ramada, incredible band, one of the absolute best live performances you will ever see, mind-blowing music, really heartfelt, wonderful, provocative, thoughtful lyrics. All around, just top of the line. I love this band. I've had the privilege of playing with them many, many times. And hopefully we'll be doing more of them in the near future. But La Ramada was playing here in New York City. And Paul from that band contacted me and said he was going to be doing this show with Race Traitor. And wondered if we could, if my band Skullcaster could play the show with them. And we were honored to and happy to. And it was a fucking fantastic night here in New York City. That's how I met Monty. That's how I first got to see Race Traitor perform. And so it was all thank you to this incredible band, La Ramada. So now I'm going to thank them by playing you a song that you will later then thank me for, because it's incredible. So here's La Ramada from Chicago, Illinois, via the Dominican Republic. Get down.
What mother saw their children fall?
we are going to go from politics to politics. this new album, 2042, by Race Traitor, just came out on Good Fight Music.
Yes.
People can get it. Let me say first right off the bat, whatever we say about this record, I feel like is not going to be enough in the short time that we have. People need to go listen to this fucking record. You can go hear it at racetrader-hc for hardcore .bandcamp.com. So racetrader-hc.bandcamp.com, because there's just too much to talk about. We're not even going to brush the sound of the music. We're just going to talk about the content of it, because that's what we do on Dispatches. But the sound is, it's cataclysmic, ironically, right? That's the song, right?
Well, that's one of the songs, yeah.
Yeah, it's cataclysmic. I mean, it's heavy. The sound is heavy. Like, it's shocking to me. It's hard for me to understand that y'all were making this music 20-something years ago, because this music is so relevant and heavy now. What were people saying 20-something years ago when you fucking played? They were like, what the fuck is that?
We were just such a weird band in our era.
Yeah.
We were just such a weird band. Because, like, we were playing in the hardcore scene. We kind of came from... We always were, like, kids that had, like, one foot in kind of the sort of abolition record scene, one foot in the power violence scene, and one foot in the sort of straight-edge hardcore scene. And then we just decided to take all those influences and use them to play death metal.
Yeah.
That's basically what the band was.
Yeah.
And so it never really had this, like, natural home. Never.
Yeah.
Now, like, there's kind of other bands that do that, you know? And I think, like, we have a cult, like, sort of a cult following, I said. Like, we're not one of those bands that is, like, you know, a legendary band that is, you know, is a prerequisite for people to, like, listen to if you're into that kind of music. But there's this, like, weird cadre of, like...
Cadre is a good way to put it. You know, it's better than cult,
vegan,
yeah,
metal nerds that really appreciate us.
Vegan metal nerds is, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've never had a song about veganism until now.
Right, we have a song about, and it's not 100% about veganism. It's about veganism and labor and environment, but yeah.
Oh, there's veganism finally in it. So, like, this is like a cathartic moment for the vegan nerds out there. Nice. All right, let's talk about the album. So we talked a little bit at the beginning of the last segment about why 2042 in 2018. But first of all, what's the name of the album? Like, why 2042?
So 2042 is a date that the U.S. has been predicted by U.S. census takers of being the date that the U.S. becomes a minority-majority country, which means that people who are identified on the census as white will be less than 50%. And it's talked about quite regularly in the ultra-right media circles.
It's like the danger of the point.
And the whole Trump Sessions concentration on immigration is about demographics.
Right,
it's not about crime and all this bullshit that it's about controlling demographics. So we were just like, okay, this is what the album's about. It's about responding to all the ideological and other sort of permutations of that fear of 2042. So I describe it as our version of Fear of a Black Planet.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Let me ask this about your show and the album, because I'm curious what your answer is going to be. How do you, when you have folks listening to this album, whoever it is out there listening to this album, or they come to a show, like, how do you want them to leave that listening? How do you want them to leave that show? Like, what is it that you want them to get from your show and from the music? I'm assuming that you want to get the same thing from the show and they're listening to the record, but it could be different. I don't know.
No, it's kind of the same. I mean, I don't want to put it, like, we're kind of seen as a band, I think, correctly, that is, like, really focused on their message and sort of putting stuff out there. But I don't want to minimize that there's a selfish nature to this. I don't want it to sound all altruistic. So part of doing the shows in the band is so we have a cathartic outlet. Now, that's all bands. So the thing that makes
yeah, for sure.
The things that makes us unique is that, you know, we also sort of have a very intent, pre-calculated goal about like how the audience is like receiving our music and our live performance. So to compare and contrast that from when we were a band in the 90s, we were like really trying to be provocative and disruptive of the space. We were trying to force people to have conversations about race and class that they hadn't had before. And we were trying to do it through a sort of shock and awe campaign. But now, like I said before, I feel like the conversation is like caught up with us. We don't have to like shock people into paying attention. You don't have to like force people to admit they have privilege. A lot of people probably are, you know, they come to the show with those sort of understandings. So I feel now we're more of a support system and a cheerleader. Mm. Right? So
feels a lot better, right? Feels
that it's
feels,
a lot easier.
It's a lot more fun.
You know, there's a lot more positive feedback.
A lot less threats of what's going to happen on the exactly. way to load the gear out, for sure.
Right. And you don't have to, like, you're not as surrounded by negativity. Yeah. But so the way I see it is that we have people coming to our shows that, yes, there's some people who we could force them to think about things they haven't thought about or inspire them things they haven't thought about. But our bigger role, I think, is more about preaching to the converted. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, because I think politics, whether it's electoral politics when they talk about, or you know, mobilization for like more radical change, is first and foremost, it's about growing your base, but it's also about mobilizing your base. Mm. So we see ourselves as a band that can get people who are already on our side, who might not be in the streets, or people who are in the streets, a moment not to feel so alone, to have a shared experience and also have their love of their sort of passion for social justice reflected in, you know, the art and entertainment that they consume. So that's sort of what I see as our role. And I guess one thing that makes us a little, I think, also better at what we do is that we've been involved in social justice or human rights or some similar sort of activism professionally and on a sort of grassroots voluntary level this entire time. So we bring to it some level of experience where we've tried to, with various levels of success, actualize the things we're talking about. And I think we also, so we serve as maybe a band that can also reflect that sort of experience of trying and failing and trying again.
That's very well said. I feel like I'm going to play that segment so when people ask me, I can just tell them to listen to this and feel like, well, Monty does it better and says it better and than anything I do. So please.
I don't think that's at all true.
Well, at least he's definitely say it better than anything I could say about it, because that was really articulate and really well thought out. I think one thing that I felt, and when All Torn Up played with you at the St. Vitus show with La Armada, and there was a real sense. First of all, I really appreciated that your band does not roll its eyes when you're talking for long periods of time, which anyone who is a political singer and who has bandmates, I feel like they're always constantly like, okay, shut the fuck up and let's play a song. And I thought y'all and Race Trader did it the best. Like, it was long periods of you talking, and it felt really good and didn't feel too long for the crowd. It felt like really great. And no one in your band was like pushing to start the next song. It was really nice to see. And so I really am glad that you're all on the same page. But I felt like leaving that show, it was the right intersection. It was the right connection between empowerment and consciousness. Like, I felt empowered and uplifted and ready to go, you know, continue to do my work. But also, like, I was reflective and thinking about things that I failed on and am not doing right. And that's a hard balance to make. And I thought that was something that really carried through in the performance. And I think it carries through in the record, too.
Yeah, first off, I should probably always come here whenever I'm feeling down.
No problem. Give me a call, Monty.
This has been a very, you know, uplifting, you know, like, this is a podcast, but I've been blushing this entire time every time there's a compliment. So it's great to see when at least even one person receives what you're doing the way you tried to do it. Because that's not always the case.
Not, it's almost never the case, actually. After you were done playing, I didn't have a piece of paper, so I had written notes all up and down my arm about things you were saying during your set, and I couldn't see because it was a dark room, and I had, my wife's like, why do you have that? I'm like, wow. I really thought that was really good, what he just said there.
That's a first, so yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, we incorporate the spoken word elements as part of our set planning. So when we talk about like, what are we going to do for the show? We talk about like, what are the topics we want to talk about? What is something that we could say really well? What's in the news? A lot of times we gear what we say towards the location that we're in. So, you know, if we're in a place where there's a certain issue, you know, if you're closer to the border, you might talk about border issues more. So the band is in on it. So the rest of the band members are part of the conversation, typically. And we know that that's one of the things that set us apart. You know, that thing that'll make us remember. If you loved or hate us, at least you know, well, that band talked a lot. And we're from Chicago. And Chicago, you know, it's from Los Crudos is from. There were a lot of bands that talked more than you would see in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we started touring and meeting people in other cities and stuff, we were just like, how come nobody talks? Mm. It was weird for us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's part of the thing. And another thing is kind of what you said in terms of the self-reflection. I have to really credit our guitar player, Dan, our bass player, Brent, for this. They always remind me to includes like the self-criticism of us, to point out our own failings, to point out that we're, when we say you is inclusive of us, or, you know, it's that we are imperfect vessels, and we are, the critique of is about us, which is actually something that's funny, because one of the critiques of the band has been, oh, they're a bunch of rich kids, which isn't true entirely, but a couple of us come from, you know, upper middle class families, like, well, you know, very comfortable families, including myself. And I would be like, are you paying attention to the band? The whole point of the band is that, yes, we have privilege. And that's the whole, and that's the point of view that we're expressing. That's where we're coming from. So it was always important for us to make very clear that we're not saying in any way that we, everything we're saying could just as easily is applied to us.
Right. You're including yourself in the criticism of others.
Totally. 100%.
I mean, I don't understand that perspective, Monty, because I don't think I have any problems. But I mean, I guess I understand, you know, that's.
But like I said, I credited my bass player, my, you know, we sing for bands. Yeah. So we have to have a certain level of, or certain lack of self-awareness.
For sure.
Right. It's a prerequisite of the talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my bass player, my guitar player always remind me, don't forget to say.
That does remind me about how shitty my bass player and my guitar player are, actually, now that you bring that up. What the fuck is their problem? All right, we only have a couple of seconds left. I want you to tell me what song. I don't care about your favorite song. I want to know what you think is the song that people should first listen to on the album. Obviously, the first song. But, like, is there a song that you personally, Monty, feels like, all right, you know what? Like, a punk's going to go listen to this album. This is the one song that I want them to listen to, whether it be musically or lyrically, whatever, like, you think is the most important thing that they get to. Or it could be the hook 'em. Like, what do you think?
Well, we like, and I mean, the band is unanimous that we like the song Black Christmas the best.
Which was the first, like, single.
Right. And we did that because we wanted, that was the hook 'em. You know, the first song on the album is the first song on the album because the album is a story, which maybe we shouldn't be doing in the era of Spotify, right? Because, you know,
we're from the '90s. We can't help but fucking listen to the whole album.
But there's a sequence and there's a logic to the way the songs go. But Black Christmas to me is the thing that really sucks you in or really sucks us in. We think it's musically like interesting, but it's really just like, I mean, it's a very aggressive song.
What's that song about?
So that song is about, it's sort of about this idea that like the right wing people freak out about things like a black Jesus or a black Santa, particularly black Santa, but also black Jesus. And
that sounds awesome.
Or like when people sing the American national anthem in Spanish,
that
the right wing is triggered by this, right? So we're kind of mocking the fact that they're triggered by it, but like what's underlying that? So, which is, you know, goes back to like sort of the whole concept of the album. It's sort of, but it's our first song that's, we're kind of a too serious band, unfortunately. So it's like our first song where there's even a wink in there, right? And then the other wink at it is that it's what they call blackened, a blackened song, which is a term for something having a black metal influence.
Oh.
And of course, there's like, you know, who's more about cultural purity than certain segments of the black metal community?
For sure. Right? Yeah, so, cultural purity and otherwise.
And this song purity is about, you know, a lack of purity in every way.
That's good.
So nice. There's also a wink at that.
Nice. All right, we I think we're going to play that song right now. Monty, thank you so much for coming on and doing this podcast with us, and thank you so much for all the music you make and the consciousness you bring, the empowerment you do. I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, man.
It was great being here, for real.
Just a reminder for everyone could go hear the entire album, 2042, at racetrader-hc.bandcamp.com, and I'm sure there's a way to leave extra money if you can. So go there and leave as much money as you can there. So hopefully you'll come back soon.
Or steal. It's fine.
Get down. So here is a song we were just talking about. Here is Black Christmas from Racetrader's brand new album, 2042, which you can get on their Bandcamp page. Black Christmas. Get down. That's the end of the episode. I want to thank Monty again for getting down with us. He is very thoughtful and very, you know, just honestly, he's what I should be as a host of this show and am just falling short of constantly. So I'm very impressed with him and everything he said. Really, really articulate, really thoughtful guy. And I feel like he's doing wonderful things in the world. So I really appreciate everything he's doing and that he was willing to pause all that stuff, all that wonderful stuff, and come on the show and talk some shit with us. You did a great job. Thank you, Monty, for doing that. Thank you for everything. And Race Trader, I want to thank you all for listening in every single week. Please go to dispatchersfromtheunderground.com, subscribe there, check out the merch section. There's an archive section there that you can go back and check all the shows that we have for the past years and years and years. They're all free, so you can download the ones you want and avoid the ones you don't. There are some real gems on there, so check out that archive section. And again, please rate us on iTunes with a million stars or whatever, and let people know, share all this. All of that's free. So if like, you dig this and you're just not in a situation where you can put some money toward this, I understand that. Please take some time and share the show. Let people know you listen to it and rate it and so on. If you are in a situation where you do have a couple of bucks that you can, you know, share with us, we really appreciate that. We know it's not easy to come by money. And please, there is a donate section on our page, dispatchersfromtheunderground.com. Go and donate there. If you don't want to donate, I get it. The show's going to be free. No worries. Either way, go and buy the new Race Trader album, which is at their Bandcamp, racetrader-hc.bandcamp.com, or on Good Fight Music. It's an incredible album. Super honored that Monty could come on and do the show with us. And again, as I said in the beginning of the show, I'm super honored that all of you continue to listen, and hopefully we are helping you sort out, you know, the horrible mainstream bullshit that constantly bombards us. Hopefully this is a show that helps you sort some of that out and get your head straight, and also, like, you know, put your head back down and get to the fucking work we all need to be doing. So thank you all. Thank you all for doing that with us, and continue to do this. I hope you dig it. Get down. We're going to end this episode with a band, I think, that are buddies with Monty and the Race Trader crew. I don't know a ton about this band. I know that they were featured along with Automata in a recent video, the Cataclysm video that Race Trader put out for their song Cataclysm, which is on their new album, 2042. This band, along with a bunch of other folks, Automata, Decline, the band we're about to play, Life's, Through and Through, Turnspit, Balanashi, I don't know how to say that, actually, Balanache, all these bands were featured in the video, and actually, I don't think Race Trader was actually even in the video that they put out for their own song, which is an interesting turnabout. Here is one of the bands. I know Race Trader has played with this band, they're friends of this band, and they're an incredible band on their own right, and super happy to know more about them because of Race Trader. So here is Red Bait. Check it out. Get down.